This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to The Informer, Joy 94.9's nightly news and current affairs program, and your link to the stories that matter. We are committed to bringing you the day's most important news and current affairs stories from an LGBTI perspective. If it matters to the LGBTI community, we will cover it. We want to hear from you. Join the conversation, SMS 0427 Joy 949 or email on air at joy.org.au or follow us on Twitter at The Informer Joy.
It's Wednesday, the 22nd of November. I'm Daniel Roberts and we have a massive show on tonight's Informer.
And I'm Kate Kelly. And I tell you what, Dan does not lie. On tonight's show, we're talking mental health and International Trans Day of Remembrance. Some big, important topics on tonight. And as always, keep an ear out for our depressing Wednesday fact, because tonight we've got a real doozy.
Well, we say that every week.
Every week it is, though. We're just really good at it.
You're right. You're right. And this one is a real doozy, we promise. But like Kate said, we're going to be discussing some meaty subjects. If you find any of this at all triggering, please call Lifeline on 13 11 14. Let's kick off with mental health. Whilst it is important to point out that many LGBTI Australians live healthy and happy lives, a large number of our community face higher rates of mental health issues and suicidal behaviour, directly related to the stigma, prejudice and discrimination we sometimes face.
Talking about mental health is really hard. So earlier today, me and Dan spoke to someone who does it very, very publicly. Neil Hilborn is a spoken word artist from the US. He uses his art form to open up and talk about mental health. This is to sold out audiences. So how does he get the courage to do it? Well, we wondered that too.
It was kind of an accident, you know. I've been writing poetry ever since I was a small kid, but my sophomore year of college, somebody who, now he's my good friend, at the time I didn't know who he was, his name is Dylan Garrity, he showed up to a meeting of my literary magazine with a spoken word piece he wanted to workshop. He stood up and he did this poem, and it was terrible. You know, it was so bad. It was a genuinely awful poem. But like, he really meant it. You know,
that's cute.
I know, right? I mean, like, he's one of my best friends now. I mean, I'll tell him that to his face. But like, you know, we were all bad back then. But like, it seemed like a really cool way to do poetry in like a really immediate and fun way to sort of get into the art form. Dylan took me to some poetry slams around Minneapolis, St. Paul, where we live, and then we started a slam at our college, and now it's 10 years later, and it's my full-time job, you know?
It's kind of interesting that you've grown up around it. You'd think that it's sort of something that you'd be introduced to maybe later in life, but you've sort of always had this interest in poetry and writing.
I mean, I'm not really sure. You know, like, even when I was a little kid, I always liked poems. Like, I wrote my first poem when I was, like, 8. My mom read me, like, poems as, like, sort of as bedtime stories when I was a little kid. Like, she read me, I'm such a pretentious kid. She read me, like, Shakespeare sonnets and stuff, but apparently I love it. So, I've always been into poetry. So I don't know, man. I always wonder about that, like, maybe if I'd had a more, like, musically inclined family, like, maybe I'd be playing guitar or something. But I'm also bad at music. Like, I don't really know. It's such an interesting question. Like, I have a hard time imagining being in any other art form when I've done for pretty much my whole life. But I'm certain it could have happened, you know.
Neil, talk us through why you've concentrated so much on mental health issues in your work.
Sure. I mean, it's just kind of what I'm going through, you know. I think the community that I came up in, the poetry community in Minnesota, is very very focused on like personal narrative and sort of openness and honesty and confessionalism. So it was just like the people that I was learning from and that I was working with all the time, like everybody was just out there telling their stories, you know, and my story was so often centered around having OCD and bipolar disorder and extreme anxiety and depression and all this stuff, right? So it was just a thing that I had to talk about and that I was encouraged to talk about. And it turned out I was good at talking about it. So, you know, I've kept doing it. It's always been really cathartic and therapeutic for me. And I think that at least people have told me that it helps them out too. So I keep doing it, man.
Neil, I'm interested. I know it's hard to measure sort of a sense of release, but what in terms of relief and what you feel once you get things off your chest, for example, what's the difference between writing and performing? Is there a bigger sense of relief after you've performed?
I would say it's different, you know, like I think that writing, there's something like it's really useful for me because it allows me to, like, I'm not the kind of person who just writes one draft and then it's like perfect and it's done. You know, my first drafts are like two good lines and then mostly garbage. For me, writing a poem involves going over it and thinking about the subject over and over and over and really focusing really hard on it. So that for me is like, that process allows me to, it allows me to like really get into whatever my emotional or mental issue that I'm trying to write about is and really think about it super hard. And then performing it, it's more of a desensitization thing. You know, like the first maybe 5 or 10 times I perform a poem, it's really intense and it's hard and I feel this like immense sense of relief. And then after I do it enough, it's kind of like, so I took this thing that was huge and scary for so long. And because I like can talk about it in front of strangers over and over, suddenly it gets less scary and it gets smaller every time I talk about it. Two different forms of therapy. They're both like pretty important though.
I wanted to ask you about that specifically because, you know, there's still a culture surrounding mental health issues that is very much don't talk about it, keep it under wraps, you know.
Sure.
But here you are, you're talking to large crowds about it. Did you ever feel the point where you kind of went, oh, this is too much information, or this is embarrassing putting this through, or anything like that?
Yeah, every day.
Well, how do you get through that then?
I'll just check in with, like, I mean, if it's at a show and I'm feeling like, oh, this is too much, I just like look at people's faces and I'm like, oh, and it's clear that they're into it and that like people are ready to follow it. So I just keep doing it, or like, you know, or I can just like get on social media and like my mentions on Twitter or something and people are like, you know, thank Neil so much for like sharing the story. It's really helpful. And I'm like, cool, great. I'll keep doing it. You know? So I think for me, I've got that feedback mechanism where like every time I doubt it, I can just literally look at something that encourages me to keep doing it, you know? Which is good for me because like I grew up in a, you know, I wouldn't say like a household that necessarily like repressed emotions or whatever. We were still pretty, you know, still pretty waspy Texans. So we just like didn't talk too much about stuff. So I really had to learn how to be open and share things. So it's nice to me that I can get pretty constant reminders of how important it is to like be open and genuine with people, you know.
There is still more to come on Joy's The Informer, the news program from an LGBTI perspective.
That was Kate and I speaking to Neil Hilborn about how he uses his art form to discuss his mental health issues in a very open way. In the current climate, raising awareness around mental health issues seems more important than ever.
QLife are an LGBTIAQ+ specific phone counselling service. They talk mental health every single day. So earlier today, we gave Stella Topaz, QLife's national project manager, a call to talk about mental well-being.
Stella, from QLife's perspective, what were the last few months like?
The last few months have been some of our busiest months. And I guess for QLife, we just remain focused on the calls and the web chats that come in. So even when there's tumultuous environment around us and politics and social commentary flying, in the end it's just who rings and what they ring with that we sort of respond to. But we do know we were incredibly busy over the last few months.
Was there a specific demographic that was more affected during the last few months?
We don't really collect that level of data. We're an anonymous service, and so people tell us what they want to tell us, then we collect data based on what they wish to disclose. I think that our anecdotal sort of looking back, we'd say that actually people across all ages and living in different locations and all experiences have had an effect when there's a large political debate and lives are at question. But I guess the thing is that for people who are perhaps not out or well supported, who are socially isolated, it can perhaps maybe increase the sense of isolation when you feel like you're sort of under a lot of scrutiny.
Now, you might not be able to answer this. As you said, you don't collect data, but is there a specific issue that commonly arises when people call in?
Yeah, we do find that some of the most common reasons that people call is often for isolation, feeling isolated or wanting to reach out and have social contact. So sometimes people call because they're looking to make social contact, find a group or a bunch of people close to them or an activity. Sometimes people ring because they don't feel like they can talk to anybody else, and they can do that in an anonymous environment. So that's two different versions of isolation in a way. Relationship issues are always big, and they can be anything from breakups or falling in love, or they can be family relationships, which could be about violence or rejection, or it could be about how to talk to family, how to come out, how to have a better relationship with people in someone's family or community. Those probably the biggest ones.
Stella, in terms of mental health, what are some of the problems that LGBT people in regional areas might specifically come up against?
We do have a Q-Life guide that we've written about living in rural and regional areas to help health professionals who are working with people in those areas. And what we put in there is that often the isolation can be a really big factor for people in rural and regional areas, but sometimes, to the contrary, sometimes a isolated community actually really pulls together and supports people who are struggling or who see themselves as on the outside. So there's no one rule, but for some people it's often about accessing services. So finding a doctor or a counsellor who you feel like you can be out to, or that you can talk about issues with, fear of whether or not that the privacy will be kept in a small community if you tell your best friend or your teacher or someone that you work with. So I think it just magnifies sometimes the sense of risk for some people, and whether or not that risk turns out to be real, the fear is a big issue on its own, and sometimes that fear is well grounded and sometimes people are pleasantly surprised.
We're coming up to Christmas. Yeah, oh, sorry, excuse me.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I was just going to say that the distance is an issue. Like if you can see what's happening in a big country town nearby, or if you can see that there's Mardi Gras or Midsummer or Pride happening in big capital cities, and you might really feel the isolation of that you can't get there, or you can't imagine ever seeing yourself as being part of that community. That can be difficult. But for some people, they don't want that big city experience. They just want a few really well-chosen good friends and support networks. So it's so individual.
Well, we're coming up to Christmas now, and that can be a hard time for many LGBT people, but I mean, well, anyone really. But how does Q-Life encourage mental health? How does Q-Life encourage mental well-being throughout what can be a difficult time?
Yeah, definitely. It's a really good thing to be thinking of. And in fact, it's great to think of it far ahead, because we would encourage people to be thinking ahead about what's going to help them to feel well supported and well loved, and to make good decisions, you know, that they can. So maybe planning to be around people who you do feel accepted and cared for. If you do have family obligations and you feel scared or worried about those, you could think about whether there's strategies to time limit them, or whether you can take a friend or someone with you, or whether you do get some counselling support to be able to practice saying some of the things that you need to say. Or you might be able to sandwich it in between other things. So a lot of people have like an evening gathering with their LGBTIQ friends so that they can sort of debrief the day that they've had, where they felt like they had to hold their, you know, they had to hold back a little bit. And the other thing might be just thinking about how to consider things that keep you safer. So if drinking too much tends to make you say things you regret, then you might want to plan ahead about whether that's a good idea or not. And those things can be really hard, but
it's solid sort of advice.
Like being, it's sort of like trying to think about how can I support myself best I can, but recognizing that the pressure is real, and often the discrimination or the dismissiveness of your identity or your relationship can be really real, so you're not imagining it, and give yourself some credit for surviving in a heterosexual world.
Well, Stella Topaz from QLife, thanks for joining us on The Informer.
There is still more to come on Joy's The Informer, the news program from an LGBTI perspective.
That was Kate and I talking to QLife's national project manager.
I just want
manager,
to remind
Stella
you Topaz
that if you find any of tonight's content triggering, you can call Lifeline on 13 11 14.
Transgender Day of Remembrance started as a web-based project by Gwendolyn Ann Smith, a transgender woman who wanted to memorialise the murder and pay homage to the life of transgender woman Rita Hester. It's now a massive day of international action. Observed in over 185 cities throughout more than 20 countries, it's a big, big thing. In Melbourne, Why Gender, the organisation dedicated to creating safe spaces for trans youth, held their own remembrance. We spoke to the head of Why Gender, Kahava Lillett, about what they did on the day.
It was really lovely. It was awesome to see so many trans people coming together and supporting each other.
And what kind of workshops did you run?
We had some creative expression things in the first session. We had a wall of resilience where people shared messages and identities and names to remember the kind of strength and creativity that's in our community. And we made a stars jar where people made origami stars and wrote down the names of people they wanted to remember. And then we had a facilitated discussion about vulnerability and who in our community is vulnerable and what we can do to support each other and combat lateral aggression. And then we read out the names and lit a candle and had some moments for reflection and remembrance.
What were the responses from the people that attended?
It was really positive responses. People really feel like having that kind of community space is autonomous and defined by us to be able to remember this.
Now, this might seem like a bit of an obvious question, but why is being part of this International Day so important?
Yeah, it's really important because our community faces so much grief and is targeted in so many different spaces as trans people, and that can be really hard to deal with, and it's something that we deal with every single day. So having this time to reflect and to help each other process that and understand what's happening and to help each other figure out more about how we can stop it happening is so important.
From your perspective, Kahava, how is the community feeling? What types of things are they talking about?
Well, we've obviously just had the postal survey around marriage equality. And for trans people in particular, it hit quite hard because on the one hand, we had a conservative group targeting trans people and spreading misinformation and fear-mongering about our community. And then on the other side, we had some campaigns in favor of marriage equality still not fully including trans people or understanding how marriage law affects trans people as well. So for a lot of people in the trans community, there's these feelings of isolation and exasperation and not really having that same kind of solidarity and support that other parts of the queer or LGBTIQA plus community we can have sometimes. So this is a really well-timed event to happen, to have this community space for it was just focused on trans people and did give us a bit of a break within our own community.
Trans Day of Remembrance is about recognising and remembering the deaths of trans people across the world. And Y Gender's work is primarily focused on young trans kids. I wanted to ask about how you walk that line of explaining the horrific realities for many that many trans people face whilst also trying to build young trans kids' positivity and confidence in their identities.
A big part of it is that we need to be honest about the realities that we face. Trans people of every age see the kind of targeting our community faces. There's no way to exist as a trans person in public and be completely unaware of the kind of oppression that we have to deal with. So days like Trans Day of Remembrance aren't introducing any new information to the trans community. Even for trans kids, we already know that this is happening. But days like Trans Day of Remembrance give us space to talk with other trans people who are experiencing the same kind of things and understand better how we can respond to it.
Are the trans kids you work with nervous about their futures?
That's definitely part of it, that there's not a lot of support for trans and gender diverse people, that there are a lot of laws that target or exclude us. And although representation is improving somewhat, it's still severely lacking. So a lot of trans young people are growing up without really being able to see anything that they can be.
This is The Informer, Joy 94.9's nightly news and current affairs program, and your link to the stories that matter.
That was Kate and I speaking to the head of Y Gender, Kahava Lillet, earlier. This day is important for all members of the trans community, as it creates a strong feeling of togetherness. Earlier today, Kate and I invited one of our favourite guests back onto the show to talk about how important this day is and what it's like to experience it over two different continents. If we had a live audience, I would ask them to put their hands together for host of Trans POV, Mama Mish. Mama Mish, you've just arrived back from the States. What are some of the differences you've noticed in relation to trans acceptance between Australia and the US?
You know, it's funny. I was there for 3 weeks, and it was my first time back since transition 4 years ago. And where I come from in St. Louis is very much Bible Belt. So I assumed going there based on things that we report on from shows like Transpositions and Trans POV that there'd be attacks in the toilets, there'd be all kinds of things. But funny enough, I actually found that I was actually treated the way I wanted to. I was like, how can I help you, ma'am? I was with my mom. They said, how are you ladies going? Nobody missed a beat whatsoever, which is really surprising, though, when you hear this coming from a small town like St. Louis, which is Bible Belt, that across the U.S. we still had the highest murder rates amongst trans people ever recorded.
And when you're in Australia, is there a stark difference to how you're treated, or have you found that it's similar?
No, I find it's very similar. I think what's probably the biggest difference, though, is here being out and about is very common. Like, you walk in down the streets, the chances of running across someone who's trans or gay or lesbian or whatever partridge in a pear tree, it's more common. Where there, I found that walking through, say, shopping malls, for example, or going to men's department stores or women's, there's a very strong gender stereotyping, the way people dress, the way things are purchased. It's very, very strong in the way the products are pitched to both genders.
Mama Mish, Trans Remembrance Day has just gone, and we'll get to what it means conversationally in a second. I'm just interested to know what it means for you.
For me, it's making sure that we remember those who have passed. And for me, one thing for me is I always try to, it is a day for mourning, but also try to say, hold sessions where, what have we learned to this point? What have we done to this point? What are we doing and what can we change? For me, it's always like almost like a trans new year saying, okay, this is what we've done this far to make a difference and change. What do we need to do differently? And that's for me. I always sort of reboot my based on this particular day.
How do you think Trans Remembrance Day has changed the conversation?
Trans Remembrance Day has really just, it's really definitely has raised more awareness. And it's really interesting that we've had this plebiscite go through just before Trans Remembrance Day. And it's a very, it's very good that it actually happened at the same time. Because if you look what happened to this plebiscite recently, and I'm not the only trans person that says this, this is parents of trans kids, partners of trans folks themselves. If you've seen what's happened in this plebiscite, we have been targeted more than just even same-sex couples. There was so much targeting towards us that you see people who have just suffered so much.
What conversations should we as allies be having, both with the trans community and for the trans community?
Look, as I always say, and you know how I kind of beat my own drum, I say the conversation needs to be had on both sides. I think it comes time for us all just sitting down, even have a cup of coffee with each other and asking each other what we're dealing with or how we can help. But we also need to be open to allowing you to ask those questions as well. Without you being properly educated and being able to talk to us, there's no way we can move forward. But at the same time, it's like, okay, you want to know what's going on? You know what? Go to Google. Type in transgender, go to news, and you'll see everything that's going on in the world, everything from, say, schools to murder rates to everything transgender in the world. And if we can start doing that just a little bit, that's going to start making a difference and raise more awareness.
This is The Informer, Joy 94.9's nightly news and current affairs program, and your link to the stories that matter.
That was Dan and I talking to Mum Mish earlier about what Trans Remembrance Day means to her. If you have been upset or triggered by any of this evening's content, please call Lifeline on 13 11 14. These conversations can be hard, but the LGBTIA plus community grows stronger with every single one of them that it has. Dan, do you want to give them our depressing Wednesday fact real quick?
I don't have the correct stats with me, but as far as I know, I think it was 62 or 63% of Australians that voted yes. That still means there's a whole lot of people that voted no, which means I'm going to give a massive bop bow out to, I'm not even going to name them.
Don't even deserve it. That's it for another episode of The Informer. A podcast of tonight's episode will be available shortly at joy.org.au/podcast or your preferred podcast platform. I'm Kate Kelly.
And I'm Dan Roberts. We'd like to thank all tonight's guests. The Informer will be back tomorrow at 6:30. Up next is the news headlines, followed by Unicorn Youth.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.